You got to cook a wild dinner last week?
Yeah, it was kind of in the same vein. We've had at least two recordings where I was talking about cooking with Kevin Kosowin, part of his From the Wild program, where we're in the bush, off the grid, and just cooking with ingredients and flavors that are that grow where we live. This one was a little bit different.
What grows together goes together, Alan.
Whoa, that's brilliant.
Oh, I didn't make that up, actually.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. But usually it was in the context of kind of like a workshop or a class where people are coming to learn something specific, like, you know, like field cookery, or I think we had a couple conversations about like food as medicine, like the kind of medicinal properties of some of the local ingredients. This one was a little bit different in that it was literally just a dinner, like you buy a ticket, you come, and we're just going to cook a 4 or 5 course meal for you in that same place in the boreal forest. So yeah, it was really fun. It was like cool. A lot of vibes, Shail. It was like
a lot of vibes.
Well, just because I was quite nervous about it because it was supposed to be so hot that day. Like in the city, it was 30 degrees or above 30 degrees. And I was like, I'm going to be cooking over fire in the woods and it's going to be 30 degrees and everyone's going to be hot and uncomfortable. But it was, I think because it's now September, like the diurnal temperature changes are so dramatic. It was actually beautiful. It was like, by the time people came at 5:30, it had already
cooled off
a lot. And then it just kind of like the whole evening, just slowly kind of gradually decrescendoed into this beautiful central Alberta September evening. Like it's so still and calm and cool and nice sunset. And yeah, it was wonderful.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was really fun, actually. Yeah.
I like that word, decrescendo.
Oh, thank you. That's a good one. from my junior high music days.
Musical training.
Yeah. I played the French horn, in case you didn't know, but
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's kind of an intimidating instrument, I feel like, but
many people believe that. Yeah, it's probably the most intimidating of all of the wind instruments, I would say, but what am I talking?
Or at least on the surface or something. I don't know. I tried to play it a little bit, but it was like it's big and kind of unwieldy, and it's similar to a trumpet in that you have to play a lot of notes with only a few variations in your fingering and stuff, so you have to change your embouchure
I can't believe you just said embouchure. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
How did we get here?
That's right. It's all about the embouchure.
Yeah.
Great word. Do you want to know what we cooked or?
Yeah, totally. Quickly give me a rundown. Is it stuff that you'd cooked out there before or?
There was definitely elements of things that we you and I have talked about in our wild food episodes. And so the hors d'oeuvre, the opening bite, was an elk tartare. And it was kind of sandwiched between, I think we talked about this in the 11 Madison Park cookbook conversation. It was kind of like sandwiched between these like cheese tuiles, kind of like these cheese crackers. And then like placed vertically on the plate. So, you can like, it looks like an ice cream sandwich set on its end, on its edge.
Whoa, cool.
And it had, like wild horseradish and nodding onion and spruce in it. And then the first course was
spruce tips or
there's not spruce, what people usually talk about, spruce tips, is in spring, like those like really light green ones that come out in spring. But we don't have those this time of year. So it was mature spruce needles, but they were just yeah, cut, chopped,
like
very
chopped
fine.
Really fine or something. Oh, okay, cool. That's a really intense resinous flavor, so you must not have to use very much.
Yeah, a little goes a long way for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And then the first proper course was a mushroom soup, and it was right. kind of a variation of a dish that we've talked about on the show and that we've served at Ernest's, where there's like the cream of mushroom soup that's just like covered with a whole bunch of crispy vegetables.
Right.
Like thinly sliced.
The forest floor mushroom soup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah. But it was made with shaggy parasol and rough stem mushrooms that were foraged from around there. And actually some it was garnished also like in the leaves or whatever of the garnish. There were some morel mushrooms that were harvested this past spring.
I've seen a few shaggy parasol mushrooms on people's yards when I've been walking in the city in the last couple
of weeks.
Is that
right? Yeah. There's a house just like a block away from mine that has like bountiful shaggy parasols, like just growing in the shade under the like carrigana, sorry, not carrigana, the Cotone aster bushes. And I've looked at them enviously every August or September for the last many years.
They don't last long once they pop up. So if nobody's putting them to use, then yeah.
Oh, I would never. I mean, I've contemplated knocking on the door.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Knock on the door and be like, "Hey, are you using those mushrooms?"
Yeah,
and they'll be like, "Feel free to poison yourself."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The principal course was meant to be rabbit, and when I was preparing the rabbit, I don't know if we used the same rabbit supplier or what, but they had big, beautiful livers and kidneys in them.
Whoa.
And so we had kind of like an interlude course that was just a little glass of, I don't know if you've heard of this, but a little glass of liver mousse McDonald, which
oh man.
So a rabbit liver mousse, and it was capped with a little bit of sour cherry jelly.
Wow, awesome.
In the McDonald style. So and toasted hazelnuts on top of it.
Right on.
Which led into the principal plate, which was I think, what did we call it? I would call it a rabbit roulade. I think on the menu, maybe it was rabbit torchon, but it was like boned out, rolled rabbit, loads of garlic, loads of herbs, braised in red wine and stock, and served with that mushroom gnocchi we've talked about, where
right.
like part of the flour content of the gnocchi is substituted with dried, like pulverized mushroom. And dessert was a dandelion custard, which also I think that we've talked about before, where it's like a set custard where the dairy is infused with dandelion coffee, like roasted dandelion root.
Yeah.
A little bit of whipped cream. And then the one thing that one part of this dish that I hadn't done before was taking just the like little nuggets of dandelion coffee, roasted dandelion root, and just treating it like if you're going to make candied hazelnuts or something like that, like just mix them with dried sugar. Mix them with sugar, put them in a dry pan and like caramelize the sugar. So they're coated with crunchy caramelized sugar and finish it with a little bit of butter. And that was the garnish, and it worked shockingly well. Like I didn't really know what I was doing, but it, yeah, like it has like a beautiful, like it's very aromatic, as you're cooking it. And then just like the kind of, crunchy, sugary texture of candied nuts.
Sweet. Was that like a spur of the moment decision to like candy the dandelion coffee?
Kevin has told me many times that he ate a dish that had some kind of crunchy, chewy, roasted dandelion garnish. And so I think I made some feeble attempts to try and make that replicate in years it. Past. But like, this was the first time I was just like, I'm just going to literally just take a candied hazelnut procedure and see if it works the dandelion root. I don't know. I really did not expect it to work half as well as it did, because it's like a very different, like when you eat the, if you taste the dandelion coffee and you chew it, like it's not the texture of nuts, but for some reason,
yeah, it's nothing like a hazelnut.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like a fruit leather or something, right?
Yeah. Like it has a really persistent hard chew. Like it's not pleasant to eat it out of hand. Like it's meant to be steeped in liquid.
But you made it pleasant, Alan, and that's the art.
It worked pretty well. Yeah, it worked. Well.
That's awesome.
Anyways, it was really fun. And we're doing another one in 2 weeks. It'll probably be the same menu, and yeah, it was fun.
Definitely won't be 30 degrees Celsius when you do that.
I hope not. Yeah. Welcome to Food Court. I'm Alan Sedeby. I'm here with my good buddy, Shale McDonald. Hello, Shale.
Hey, Alan.
We are two chefs in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. We love food and we love to talk about it.
I feel like Kevin is kind of like my Bigfoot or something.
Like,
I know he's out there. I've seen him. No, I definitely have met him before, and we've chatted a few times, but it just seems like we're always ships in the night, places that I'm like,
you were supposed to go
kind
on
ice cream,
a foraging
walk with him, and I was sick that day and I couldn't make it. And yeah, I don't know. This, it seems like that's happened, you know, quite a few times where I'm like going to an event where Kevin's going to be there or something. And then we're just like ships in the night or something.
Was he not at the, like when you came to that Okanagan table event at Nate, was he not there?
He was there. Yeah. Oh, okay. And I said hi to him. We chatted for a little bit there. Great. So yeah. Yep. Kevin in the wild. That's it. Yeah. I caught him that night.
Mm-hmm.
Any follow up, Alan?
No, I think that was it. Follow up.
None that I can think of either.
Yeah. Well, the real follow up is that last time we spoke, we had a topic that we never got to.
And so we totally ignored it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the follow up is the topic
from last time. Yeah.
From last time. Yeah.
Yeah. Which means this time we have a topic.
Yeah. That's so. And it's summer food.
Maybe it'll be a little more structured. Who knows?
We'll see.
We'll see.
But we're going to talk about summer food.
Yeah. And what summer food. So like, what is that? What does that mean? Do you want me to say something about it, or do you have a opening statement for summer foods, Alan?
Well, yeah. When I was trying to jot down ideas for what that means to me, I ended up with three categories. First of all, hot weather things that are good to eat when it's super hot out.
Okay.
So there's a category there.
Yeah.
The next one is ingredients that are only available in the summer. So like seasonal local things that we only eat a few times a year.
Totally.
Which is very different than hot weather food. 'Cause like a lot of my hot weather foods are like delicious, junky grocery store things that don't grow here or aren't made here, but I like to eat when it's super hot out. But then like, there's
for instance, you can grow freezies all year round, but exactly. You're not going to eat them in the winter.
Exactly. Well, that's a great example. That's right. And I love freezies, and I love, you know, hot dogs and watermelon and stuff like that. But then there's like a different category where it's like these precious jewels that only exist where we live at that time of year, like the plums in my yard and stuff like that. So those are the first two categories. And the last one is like, there's certain occasions in the summer, that we celebrate certain ways with certain food. Like for instance, Lisa's birthday is in the summer.
Oh.
And we have some things that we commonly do, for her birthday. So those are my three summer categories. Hot weather food, seasonal local gems of ingredients, And then like some special summer events or occasions that have food traditions in our house.
Totally.
What's
so where should we start? Hot weather foods?
Yes, definitely. That's where we should start.
Okay. Yeah, I think like it seems a little incongruous that we're talking about summer foods when now the weather is starting to cool off a little bit, but we never really got to talk about it during the summer, and now I think is like a good time to like reminisce on the things that we, you know, that we did have during the summer. And
yeah, it's yeah, like short-term nostalgia. Well, let's yeah, look back exactly. at the last couple of months.
So. Short-term nostalgia trip. Summer foods. Technically still summer, though.
That's right.
As of the airing of this podcast. What? Yeah.
What's the word?
Yeah. I don't know. Astronomically? Sure.
Okay. Hot weather food. You mentioned freezies. What else you got?
Well, I didn't really divide up my stuff like that, but I mean, you know, a big one that's always on my mind is ice cream, obviously. Right. Yeah. Kind of my whole summer is dictated by ice cream. Mm-hmm. Like, and its relationship to the weather. So it's kind of neat.
What's the greatest, like it's a 30 degree day. What's the ultimate ice cream? For a really like hot, sun-beaten sidewalk, waiting in line kind of situation, what's the best ice cream?
Yeah, like in a way, in a kind of embarrassing way, you're asking the wrong fella because it's hard for me to be objective about ice cream because I have so much exposure to it. However, I'll do my best to make a recommendation. So I think like my ultimate, like, you know, sidewalk, 30 degree day ice cream would probably actually be. Okay. So I got a couple of ideas.
Queso?
Here.
Is that what you said? Cheese flavored ice cream?
No, I'm just kidding. Not queso.
I'm just kidding.
You're giving me ideas. I think, I don't know. Like for me, there's something about a creamsicle that is like so satisfying for hot weather. And so I think anything like you need like a split scoop or a double scoop and you get a fruit flavor or you get vanilla on the bottom and a fruit flavor on top, I think that would be like pretty choice. So vanilla on the bottom and strawberry on top, or vanilla on the bottom and like a berry flavor on top, or like even better, vanilla on the bottom and then some kind of sorbet on top.
Okay.
So like a fruit flavored sorbet on top. I think that would be pretty amazing. That would kind of replicate the creamsicle experience with that kind of situation.
That sounds good.
What do you think?
Well, I think... For me, Shale, I like ice cream. I like it okay.
But like, then why say it like you don't like it?
Well, but I mean like a freezy that you kind of like smush up and kind of suck the juice out of. Man. That
yeah,
has
exactly.
to be.
That's why I think a sorbet is great. You asked me about ice cream, not freezy. Yeah. Those are two different things.
Yeah. I just don't think that for the pure nostalgia, no ice cream will ever come close to like just a smashed up, half melted freezy sucked out of a plastic bag. For real. Do you like, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah,
We had freezies this summer while the kitchen was like on days when the kitchen was extremely hot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's so satisfying.
And if they can be some kind of like unnatural electric blue or green color, then all the better. That's where I'm at with it.
What's my favorite? Actually,
like blue flavored freezies.
My favorite freezy flavor, I think, is probably
blue.
White.
It has to be blue.
No, white. I think it's white.
Is that's so funny? That's like an era where colors were flavors.
Yeah, exactly. I think the one that I'm thinking of, I think, is like coconut flavor, maybe.
Oh, really?
Maybe, Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds
maybe
nice.
Like coconut and pineapple flavor or something. Anyway, yeah, there was a white freezy that I really liked when I was young.
Pina colada. That sounds great.
Yeah, it's probably pina colada. That's probably what it is.
And it, I think you're also right that if you had to have ice cream instead of freezies, fruit is your friend when it's that hot.
Yeah, like I don't really want chocolate and nuts in my ice cream when it's like blazing hot out. Yeah.
Although I wouldn't turn down a drumstick when it's 30 degrees. Either.
No.
Yeah. I think that the drumstick must be the king of the ice cream man. That's a decadent frozen treat.
It sort of feels like the king of the outdoor event to me too. Like eating a drumstick, sitting on like really bad bleachers, and watching a little league baseball game or something like that.
Play baseball game, yeah, yeah. Well, now that makes me think of we've talked about the ballpark concession hamburger.
Oh man, yeah,
that might be a good summer food to discuss, but.
That is a great summer food. Concession hamburger. Yeah, concession food in general is like pretty, well, I don't know. I guess like in Canada, there's a lot of hockey concession food too. That's sort of like a different thing, but yeah. Summer sporting event concession food. That's definitely like a real deal thing.
I really like that. So where I live, there is an ice cream truck that like circles McKernan Park.
That's frightening.
I love it. Like I love hearing it and I'm like, yeah, it's summer. There's where I grew up, we called it the Dickie D man. And I assume that was like a brand of ice cream or something.
It was like a brand of ice cream. Well, yeah, I guess it's a brand of ice cream, but it's more like a brand of ice cream truck.
Okay.
Like slash bicycle or tri.
Right. Yeah. 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 Yeah, that's yeah. Right. And so that's what it is in my mind, the Dickie D man. And I love hearing it, but I don't think I've ever bought ice cream from him for my children.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, it's just we've got ice cream in our freezer. You don't like, we're not going to spend money to do that.
Oh, Alan.
Yeah. I
Come
know.
On. Just
I,
once.
Yeah. I'm a monster. I understand.
They deserve to have that experience.
But yeah, they go around and play the theme music from The Entertainer or
Turkey in the Straw.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I like, I haven't heard an ice cream truck that doesn't sound like
a horror movie,
like a horror. Yeah, exactly. Like a really warped record. Like,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
In such a long time. And to me, it's just like, yeah, it's so frightening. Like, it's I don't like know what, I don't know how it's so bad. How is it so bad?
It is totally like,
I don't
the
remember it being
of...
that bad and frightening from when I was a child. Like, I think they just like, they still have the same
one, yeah.
System that they play the music from, but now it's just like 40 years old.
It is
just not working very
well
anymore.
It's straight out of a horror movie. It's kids breaking into some kind of old emporium and like the pipe organ is still playing mysteriously. And yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. But really, like, it's probably just like a chill teenager in there selling people ice cream, but just seems like the monster's going to climb out of there.
That's one of the like great tragedies of modern North America is that a lot of childhood nostalgia, like clowns and stuff, has just been turned into the fodder of horror movies.
Of horror movies.
Yeah. And I don't know why that is, but that's definitely a thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty, yeah, you're right. It's pretty much every corner of like childhood nostalgia has been mined for horror movie, like scares and props. And it's pretty sweet.
That was a weird ending to that sentence.
I'm a big fan.
if I can take a step back and really just try and approach this hot weather food that is specifically prepared or consumed in hot weather, first thing that comes to mind is camping. And so food that, like, we don't camp in the winter, like I don't camp in the winter, we camp in the summer. And so there's a lot of foods that I only associate with summer camping. And so hot dogs would be first and foremost. I maybe sometimes prepare hot dogs in the winter, like once in a winter's blue moon. But really, like, we eat hot dogs when we camp, and that's it. That's when we consume them.
Do you roast them on a stick?
It's been done. Yeah, that's been done. Yeah. It's, and I guess in the same vein, like s'mores, like I would never, there's never been a January where I've eaten a s'more unless I was at a fancy restaurant that was kind of trying to deconstruct s'mores and put it on a plate. So that's a classic, that's a nostalgic summer set of flavors for me.
Alan, have you ever had a banana boat?
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, it's another camping food that's similar, I guess, to a s'more.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I have no idea.
Wow, really?
Yeah, really. The only thing is that there used to be an inflatable raft called a banana boat that you could buy at Walmart. And I grew up with a banana boat. My friend Thomas Pedler had a banana boat, and we would use the banana boat, but I'm not familiar with the term as in relation to food.
Yeah. Okay. That boat isn't what I'm referring to. although I don't know which came first. So, a banana boat is like camp food. That's basically like a s'more, except instead of using two graham crackers, you cut open a banana. Okay. So you leave the banana in its peel, and then you split it lengthwise on one side so that you can kind of open it up.
Okay.
And stuff chocolate into it.
Right.
And then you wrap it in tin foil, and then you put it near the fire, and then you just like let it sit there and roast for 15 or 20 minutes or however long it takes. Okay. And then you take it out and you have this like banana dessert. It's like a banana stuffed with chocolate. Yeah, and it gets all like cooked.
Is the banana flesh like pretty gooey? I've never just roasted a whole banana.
It's pretty gooey. Yeah, it gets pretty gooey, and then there's chocolate in there. And I guess you could probably put marshmallows in there too. I don't know. I don't remember if we ever did that. It's funny though, because I feel like banana boats had been like completely erased from my memory. Mm-hmm. But then I saw one pop up somewhere on social media in like the last few weeks.
Oh, really?
Somebody's like camping post or something, and they were talking about making banana boats. And I was like, what? I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So banana boat.
Banana and chocolate. That's what it is. And malted salt.
Yeah, it's a banana stuffed with chocolate and
a little
baked
bit of
in tin foil by a campfire.
And a little bit of Malden.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And maybe some marshmallow fluff. Mm-hmm. Or you could take you could roast a marshmallow. So you could roast a marshmallow separately and get it nice and golden brown and then just put that on there.
Shale, I ate at a trendy restaurant a few weeks ago, and one of the desserts, one of the components was fluff. It was like, I can't remember, chocolate fluff or cherry fluff or something. And I jokingly asked where they sourced their fluff from. and they took me totally seriously and tried to explain that they make it in-house.
They actually make the fluff in-house?
It did not have the intended effect. I thought they would find it funny, but they took me at face value and were like, oh, well, actually the fluff is produced in-house. It was just a funny word
that's
for like
the danger
a,
of joking around with the service staff, Alan.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Hope you left. I hope you left a big tip after that misunderstanding.
Yeah, I was like, I just.
They're probably still have PTSD over it, I'm sure.
Okay, for camping, generally, I like to keep it easy. And so I'm all about the hot dogs and the s'mores, the stuff that you just like grab at the grocery store on your way to the campsite. Sometimes we get fancy, and probably the most memorable fancy camping meal that I've done is making gyros, like Greek, you know, meat on a stick. So grab a stick from the woods and just impale a whole bunch of thinly sliced pork on it, marinated pork. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of like clumsily rotated that over an open flame and then eaten it like in a pita with tzatziki and vegetables and stuff. That was
And you made the pita and like cooked it over the fire?
Once we did do that.
Yeah. You built a tandoor?
It was, this was actually, it was during the pandemic, Shale, and I didn't have a job. And so I had the luxury of time to do that. So we did do that once where we had kind of open flame pita and pork gyros. And it was awesome. And we've never done it again. We only had one child at the time and they were very young. And so it was obtainable, but it might never happen again.
No, it's pretty much hot dogs.
Kind of like in the hot dog realm now, but
yeah. Until one of the kids becomes like a gyros chef, and then
that's right. Yeah,
then they can make the gyros, and you don't have to worry about it. You can just read
the New York Times and
read the New York Times in a lawn chair and crack a beer.
Yeah,
that's. Like a lot of the things you're saying, the camp foods and stuff, that's a lot of the stuff that I have on my like hot weather foods list. Mm-hmm. It's like, hot dogs and things that are, like smokies. I like things that I can quickly grill in the summer. Right. But, you know, like for dinners, like I love to be able to just like fire up my grill and cook every single component of whatever dinner I'm going to have on the grill.
Yeah. And actually that's a good, that's a good point. One thing that we do is almost like if you go on fancy Italian menus, they'll have like arrosto misto, which is just like a mixed grill kind of entree, right? We definitely do dinners in the summer that are just, we put every single piece of meat and vegetable that we can find in the cooler onto the grill and just, and that like, that's supper. So it's like, maybe it's a, there'll be some kind of chunk of protein, like a pork tenderloin or something. Then it's just like every single vegetable. And if it's cherry tomatoes, they just get put on skewers and grilled at the very end. Or it's like zucchini. Like zucchinis are so prolific. You just like cut them in half lengthwise, toss them with oil and salt, and just put them cut side down on the grill until they're like burnt and soft and delicious. Cobs of corn, whole onions. We do that. It's like really? A weird thing that I do sometimes. Like the first thing that goes on the grill is literally a whole onion in its skin, tossed with oil and salt.
That's a smart idea. I don't usually do that, but that's a great idea.
And then you just like chop it up after, and it's like beautiful. Like it, like all of the like harsh like allium sting is cooked out of it. You just chop it up into little wedges and serve it with the with all the other veggies and meat. And
Yum. Yeah,
and it's kind of fun because it's like a timing game, because it's like if you're doing a whole onion, like that goes on first. Huge pieces of meat or veg go on next, but then like you have all these little skewers, like the cherry tomatoes and stuff, or mushrooms, like that don't take very much time. So you just kind of like try and make it all finish at the same time. And
I have a pretty small grill too, so it's a bit of a juggling act. Like I oftentimes, if it's for more than two people, I can't fit everything on the grill at once. So I'm kind of like starting some things and then maybe taking them off and then like putting on the proteins and then like cooking the proteins and then taking them off and letting them rest while I like, you know, heat up the stuff that I kind of cooked first and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. My like summer kind of trifecta is zucchini or patty pan squashes and eggplant and tomato, like cherry tomatoes or some kind of tomatoes.
It's a ratatouille.
And I usually, Yeah, basically. Yeah, yeah. Except like I'll often like, you know, grill the squashes really aggressively and the eggplant really aggressively, and then just like toss it with fresh tomatoes, you know, rather than
Sounds good.
It's sort of like a warm vegetable salad or something like that. Mm-hmm. Sort of like one of my favorite go-to summer vegetable or summer kind of salad things to go with dinner. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's great about like grilling a piece of bread, like just grilling bread with butter on it, like changes the flavor of the bread so much. Like totally. It makes it like a totally different thing. Yep. So I love grilling bread. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, like most of the time during the summer, just like every week, I'll pick up some, like you were saying, some kind of protein. And then as soon as I have it, I'll just marinate it. And then I'll just let it sit in the marinade until an evening when we need something to eat. And then I'll just pull it out and throw it on the grill. Mm-hmm. And yeah, a lot of the time it's chicken.
Right.
Chicken's real good for that. Chicken thighs, drumsticks.
We've got a lot of like, I don't know if it's ironic or what, but like a lot of summer food for us is cold. Like a lot of things that we pre-cook and then eat cold that we wouldn't usually do in the winter. Even things like hard-boiled eggs, like whether it's deviled eggs or egg salad or whatever, like we tend to make that more in the summer where it's like, we don't really want to have to like fire up the oven in the evening. And so we just like boil eggs at night, or boil potatoes, like potato salad. Like I would not really eat potato salad in the winter.
Alan, probably, I don't know why I didn't already talk about potato salad. It's like the greatest summer food of all time.
I agree. Potato salad, coleslaw, hard-boiled eggs, like that kind of thing where it's like you can just make it the night before when it's cool in the evening, and then that's supper the next day.
Yeah. And in the winter, you make hard-boiled eggs, but you just eat them blazing hot straight out of them.
It's like bobbing for apples, but with hard-boiled eggs out of the water. It is very cold where we live, but... yeah, there's in a way, summer food can be a lot more elemental for us where we live, because it's like, I might conceivably have a lunch that's like chopped up seasoned tomatoes and a hard-boiled egg and butter leaf lettuce in the summer, but I would never have something like that in the winter. It would more likely be soup or scrambled eggs or something that's a little bit... more affected, more processed, more cooked, more manipulated. But
yeah, which I think makes a lot of sense because you can always get fresh vegetables here, but like, you know, I'm just much more likely to like eat a lot of foods in like their less messed with form, you know, like I'll just eat raw tomatoes cold or something like that. And I just rarely do that in the winter. Everything in the winter has got to be like prepared somehow or something.
Tell me about your potato salad.
Well, I got a lot of variations, so I don't even know really where to start. It's just like, what do I have, right? Like, what kind of potatoes do I have? What kind of stuff do I have? Like if I was planning to make a potato salad, like from scratch, like, okay, tomorrow I'm going to make a potato salad and right now I'm going to go get the ingredients for it.
Right.
I really like making potato salad with baby potatoes. So just like halving them or quartering them and then, you know, blanching them in salted water until they're like pretty well cooked so that they'll rough up a bit when I sort of toss them. And I like I do like mayonnaise dressings, but I also love just making a potato salad with like olive oil and shallots and chive flowers and I don't know, like other herbs, basil and or like pickles and then grainy mustard and usually some kind of onions, usually green onions. Mm. I don't know. What am I missing? It's just sort of like whatever I have on hand usually. And I like to make it pretty. I like to put flowers on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cover the top with like nasturtiums or something. Mm-hmm. Just like makes it feel a little less plain. I don't know. But I also like potato salad like from the deli at the supermarket.
Yeah.
So
with mayonnaise and pickles and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love potato salad with mayonnaise and pickles. Like,
yeah.
Oh, actually, there's like a whole, well, we shouldn't probably go down this rabbit hole, but there's like a potato salad culture in Japan.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like a special, they have their own special recipe for potato salad. And
well, it's like, and what makes
varies it, regionally. And I didn't eat a lot of it, but yeah, I think it's pretty simple, like potato salad. I do like eggs in my potato salad too. I don't know if they have eggs in theirs. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But.
I mean, you've piqued my interest. I'm intrigued. It seems like the kind of thing that might be fetishized a little bit, like
oh, for sure. It's like Western food, but they have, it's kind of like Japanese curry, you know? Like,
right. Yeah. I understand.
They have their own version and, you know, it's delicious in a really Japanese way, you know?
Okay. So maybe this is a good, segue. So my second category, for summer food was just like the seasonal gems. And you mentioned the flowers, like putting flowers on potato salad, which is also something like, for me, it's chive blossoms. Like we have in our yard, we have so many, chives all over the place. Like they're becoming a nuisance almost, I would say, except that you can eat them and they're beautiful. So I don't really care, but, there's always one big batch of potato salad that has loads of garden chives, like green chopped garden chives and purple chive blossoms. That's like, that will happen at least once a year. And I would say that chives generally, that becomes our allium, intake in the summer.
Right.
Like our consumption.
How long does your chive blossom harvest last for?
That's a good question. We have, so the chive situation in our yard is we had a bunch of awkward, narrow strips of land that like squished between, like a poured concrete, path and like a raised garden bed or something. Like there's just like these few inches of soil that exist that you can't really do much. Very many useful things there, but you can just like dump a bunch of chive seeds, and they'll grow comfortably.
Yeah, so we have, those things will grow anywhere.
Yeah. And so we have a few different places in the yard. They have very different aspects. So like some of them are almost entirely shaded most of the day, others that are in direct sun. And so we have an interesting chive season, I guess. Like some that come up early and some that come up late. Some that come up really aggressively, but then kind of like get really spindly because they don't have,
they bolt right away.
But I would guess that we have chive blossoms pretty reliably between mid-June and late July, kind of.
Wow, that's pretty good. Like 6 weeks or something like that.
I think so. Yeah,
the majority of the chive flowers that I get now are from my mom because she has a couple of chive bushes at her place. But I think they're kind of like together, located together, and so the period of time where they're blossoming and the flowers are like useful and not starting to get like reedy and stuff like that is like fairly short. It's only like usually a few weeks, I think.
We're pretty diligent about picking the blossoms because we don't want them to go to seed. We have like,
you don't want even more chives taking over.
Yeah, basically we already have more than we can consume. And a lot of them are by, they're adjacent to, brick paths where like weeds will, will grow between the bricks. And so we definitely pick the blossoms, even if we can't eat all of them. And one thing, I know that you and I have talked about this. I don't know if it was ever in a recording, but making chive blossom vinegar, like just picking all the blossoms and just like dumping them into a pot of vinegar, is awesome. Like it's so beautiful. Like it holds that like violet, color of purple so well. And seems to maintain it. I have one crock that's, from last year, and it still has the same, like it doesn't kind of oxidize or turn brown or anything.
That's cool.
And yeah, carries the flavor beautifully. Yeah, that's one of our, that's a good summer flavor for sure.
Yeah. You can use that to make a vinaigrette for your potato salad.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, so like for seasonal gems, like, of course there's, we don't grow very many vegetables, but, my mother-in-law Judy does. And so that's always a special thing, like to get the first, like cucumbers and beets, like, well, there's usually, I love just like the German style, like kind of marinated vegetable salads. So we'll have a cucumber salad, or to do like a cold beet soup in the summer. One of my favorite things, like beet and yogurt and dill, like late in the summer when all the dill is going to seed and you have those nice flowers, tomatoes, obviously.
Yeah. Cherry tomatoes is such like I just eat a lot of them in the summer. Mm. It's like aside on like probably 75% of the meals that I eat, it's like some kind of like cherry tomato salad that's just tossed in a simple vinaigrette with some basil or something like that.
Right.
Or if I want to, you know, take it to another, you know, next level, I'll, you know, make a caprese or something like that. Mm. But yeah.
And then
basil, that's definitely summer food, Alan.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. and then fruit, like we just go crazy with fruit, through the summer from like late June, mid to late June, like hascaps ripen. And then from then until the end of August is just like, not quite week by week, but, something close to that where it's, we go, now we have hascaps. Now we have, strawberries. Now we have raspberries and Saskatoons, and now we have plums. Oh, sorry. Now we have cherries, then plums, then apples. And
yeah.
And that becomes like, a focal point of the kitchen kind of, on the sweet and the savory side, like just eating them out of hand, making desserts, trying to incorporate them. That's the one thing to like, to actually consume all the fruit that we have in the yard, like we have to incorporate it into either beverages or like savory preparations. Right. And so little wins like sour cherry barbecue sauce, like being able to eat cherries when you are grilling meat or like smoking ribs or something like that. Or actually a huge one. I forgot to mention rhubarb in that little short time.
I was going to ask you if you think rhubarb is summer food, and I definitely think that it is, but it's also kind of fall food too. I don't know.
Oh, it's really? Yeah. No,
For
us, like it's May and June. Like that's when the first kind of harvest is, and that's when it's best, and that's when we appreciate the most anyways. But like, I like rhubarb crumble or pie or tarts or whatever, but like the thing that like really kicked our rhubarb game into the next level was rhubarb iced tea
into the stratosphere.
Well, yeah, like where we like can act, because we have so much and I like crumble, but I can't, like we can't, there's only so much that a family can eat when it comes to rhubarb crumble. And so this preparation of rhubarb iced tea is like game changing, where it's like, yeah, we can blast through pounds and pounds of rhubarb by, you know, tartening our iced tea with rhubarb instead of lemon. And that's become like a really cherished, early summer, preparation.
cool. I have a bunch of rhubarb in my fridge right now that my mom got me from a friend, and I'm not quite sure what to do with it, but
perhaps you should make rhubarb iced tea.
Yeah, that's kind of a hot tip.
Yeah.
Do you ever make rhubarb lemonade? Like just straight like rhubarb sugar and
That's not a regular thing that we do. We have made rhubarb pop before, like where we how did we do that? We chopped rhubarb, steep it with sweetened water, and then strain it, and then either like try and fizz it with baking soda or yeast, or we've let it ferment naturally and very slowly in the fridge until it
until it becomes effervescent.
Yeah. And it was really tasty. A little bit unpredictable in terms of like how long it will take and all that, but
I wonder if you can just carbonate it in a soda stream or whether it would just foam everywhere.
No, I'm sure you could. I don't see why it wouldn't take to that.
Yum.
You have one?
That sounds great. I'm going to try that. I'll report back.
Okay. For me, the last category was like, there's occasions that happen or like holidays or whatever that happen in the summer that have food related to them. And so one example for me with my with my Calgarian heritage would be like the Calgary Stampede. Like once a year,
I
go to Calgary and I have a pancake breakfast and I have baked beans and that kind of thing. Like as an example, like, so we all have like these personal holidays that might occur in the summer. And so we associate that food with the summer as well.
Yeah. For me, a big summer occasion while I was growing up and then also kind of now, although I've missed it a few times in the last few years, is Folk Fest. So like, you know, what's that? Fair food, I guess, or something?
Carnival food, yeah.
Carnival food. I mean, it's not exactly carnival food. There is food at Folk Fest. There are like a lot of Folk Fest staples that you wouldn't normally find at like, you know, like a regular carnival. But
so you don't mean just mini donuts and lemonade. You mean
not what? Only mini donuts and lemonade, but like green onion cakes is one. I always get when I'm at Folk Fest.
Is the green onion cake man there?
No.
Oh, okay.
Just as some other distributor of green onion cakes.
Okay.
There's like another staple that I always get at Folk Fest and it's like slipping my mind right now. Oh, well, hot dogs. There's a Fat Frank's stand at Folk Fest. I usually get a hot dog. There's a kettle corn stand. Oh, yeah. I usually eat like a bag of kettle corn when I'm at the Folk Fest. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those things are very, very summer oriented for me, have a lot of summer nostalgia for me, those types of foods.
I'm trying to think of, so I love Fat Frank's. I think probably the place that I've eaten it most often would be in the Canadian Tire parking lot on Kingsway.
Yeah, and I've driven past that parking lot like, I don't know, we talked about it recently, and I've driven past that parking lot like, I don't know, 14 times in the last like 3 weeks or something, and I haven't seen a Fat Frank's cart there ever.
Oh, is that right? Oh, dear.
Maybe my timing's just really bad, but yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know what their season is there, like if they're certainly there in the summer, but I can't picture what the bookends are of their season, if they're there in September or October or what, but
yeah. And it might be a time of day thing for me too, because like usually when I'm driving past there, it's like during my commute. So it's like way too early in the morning or then potentially after they've closed up shop in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So,
but yeah, I think that be missing it. if carnival food, if you agree to call it that, is an important, aspect of summer food where, like, there are not really, there are winter festivals in Edmonton, but I can't think of mini donuts in the context of winter. It's like you have mini donuts at the Stampede, at K-Days, at Folk Fest, those kinds of places. So
totally. What else? What other summer events, Alan?
Well, some of them are very personal, Shale.
Don't want to get into it on the podcast? No, that's not
I just mean that they only relate to me and my family, and But like one is that sometimes Lisa and I will try and like commemorate trips that we've gone on.
Oh yeah.
And one really memorable thing is when we went to Greece a long time ago, like about 15 years ago, there was an August full moon festival that we attended, and that became a tradition for us that on the August full moon, we would eat Greek food. Like we would roast lamb or make meze and stuff like that. It's become hard. It's been hard the last few years. Like this year, I will say that we did not do anything to acknowledge this
tradition.
This tradition. But for many years after we went to Greece, on the August full moon, we would have some kind of Greek spread. In one form or another. What else? Stampede. It's funny, like for the Calgary Stampede, we used to go to Calgary for the Stampede. It's not really our scene though. I actually like the vibe in Calgary during the Stampede, but in terms of like driving into the city and going to the grounds and like,
yeah, I don't mind the vibe in the city during the Stampede, but logistically it just turns the city into a nightmare.
Yes. It's hard. Yeah. It's very difficult. Hot and busy and expensive and all that. Usually we'll go to Calgary, say like for civic holiday for the August long weekend. And then my mom will like make a Stampede meal for us then. Like we'll have like pancakes and baked beans and stuff like that. So I do
pancakes
really...
and baked beans. That's like that's a full English, right, Alan?
Almost. You need some blood pudding and a tomato or something, right? And eggs.
Yeah, and English people don't eat pancakes, but yeah. Oh, okay. Anyway.
But yeah, I like that as a summer food tradition. I was wondering about Canada Day, July 1st. Do you have any food associations with that holiday or not really?
Not really. Just firework associations, right. Mostly. Yeah. Which is pretty boring, honestly.
Yeah, it should. Like, we've kind of talked about how, like, how we have discussed this before, that different holidays have more or less food traditions, and we should try and invent food traditions for the ones that are lacking in it. Like, I think, was it even Thanksgiving versus Halloween? Like,
right.
They're right next to each other. They should both have rich food traditions, but
yeah, Thanksgiving's got so many food traditions, and Halloween's got basically candy.
Yeah,
that's all you get.
And so I would love to try and develop some for Canada Day. We did for a few years. We would kind of we made a tradition of having a picnic on Canada Day.
That's
cool. That has its own kind of connotations, like associated foods, and so there was a lot of the things that we've talked about, like boiled eggs, like there was deviled eggs or egg salad and potato salad and fried chicken and whatever else. But, that's something that I feel like there's an opportunity there.
Picnic food is like a great one. You know, like a lot of picnic food is stuff that we've already talked about, like potato salad and
watermelon and
tomato salads and watermelon and cut up fruit and stuff like that. But like there's this thing that we always used to do like on picnics when I was younger, and it's like basically build your own bunwich. So you get a bag of buns and then you get some
BYOB. Yeah, I got it.
Build your own bun. you bring some condiments and you have some like deli meat and some tomatoes and lettuce and whatever, and you put whatever you want on your sandwich. Some cheese slices usually, or like sliced cheddar or something like that. I don't really do all the, I don't make that kind of sandwich very often anymore, just with like deli meat and like a slice of cheese and like a tomato and stuff like that. But I don't know, there's something very summery about that to me.
That's actually one thing that really only a couple times a year, we're like make a point of going to the Italian Center and getting really excellent cold cuts so that we can do. Actually, sometimes we do that at camping to tie it back into that.
Right.
That'll be one of our lunches for camping is like great bread and imported cold mortadella.
Cheese.
Yeah. Yeah. And then all the, just like all the delicious condiments, like the like cheap pesto and sun-dried tomato and Kalamata olive and stuff. Yeah, that's a, I really like that.
I'm also like a big tuna melt fan in the summer.
Go on.
I don't know what it is. Like I like having tuna salad, but I don't like eating like a tuna salad sandwich on toast or bread. I like an open-faced tuna salad sandwich with cheese melted on it.
Specifically in the summer?
Yeah, it's like a real summer thing for me. I don't know why exactly, but
canned tuna.
Yep.
Mayonnaise.
Just like regular like tuna salad with like pickles in it and other herbs and onions and peppers, usually like bell peppers or something, some other kind of vegetables.
I mean, I'm down with that.
Cucumber maybe or something. Yeah, you just and like, you know, quite a bit of mayonnaise, so it's like a little too much mayonnaise. And then you grill a piece of bread, like either on the grill or under the broiler, and then you melt a piece of cheese on top of your tuna salad under the broiler and let it get a little bit crispy.
Mm-hmm. What kind of cheese?
I don't know why, but that's like, yeah, a big summer thing for me.
I'm down with that. To me, there's nothing inherently summer about that.
Summery. I know. It seems weird. I agree. It's kind of like it's a hot dish and it's like made with mostly like
preserved
food, like canned yeah, like condiments and but you know, I usually put a lot of fresh vegetables in it, like more than maybe you normally would if you were just making a tuna salad sandwich.
Right.
Like I would say like probably at least half of it or 60% of it. It's sort of like peppers and cucumbers or pickles and stuff sort of like held together with tuna salad, maybe more.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, another, I would eat it in winter too, obviously, but another great summer food for me is sushi.
Right. Yeah.
Like in winter, there's a lot of Japanese food, hot Japanese food that I would rather eat. But, you know, in summer when I want, oh man. And I just remembered another big one.
Okay.
Like Vietnamese vermicelli bowls.
Yes.
Huge. That's a huge summer thing for me.
That's why
I'll still have pho in the summer and the winter and whenever. But yeah, I don't usually have vermicelli bowls in the winter. Like,
is that right?
That's, yeah. That's a summer one for me. Yeah. Hot summer day.
And is it a temperature thing? Like, because it's kind of like tepid, like there's like worm noodles.
Yeah,
and
like the vermicelli is like not really hot. I think it's like sort of warm, but then there's like all that like cold lettuce and like bean sprouts and stuff, and and yeah, you dress it with fish sauce and like it's kind of a temperature thing, but it's also because like they usually come with like grilled meat, and that feels very summery to me as well. So yeah,
that's what I had. I ate that today. I had a number 35 from Pasteur today. That's the grilled pork and spring roll vermicelli bowl. Yeah,
that's a good bowl. I had the rainbow bowl last week.
Rainbow bowl? What is that?
It's like pork, beef, chicken, and shrimp.
That's the rainbow?
Yeah.
All those animals?
All kinds of meat.
Is that what they call it? Does it say rainbow?
I'm pretty sure it says rainbow on the menu.
Oh, really? Oh, well. I'm pretty sure.
I'm not 100% positive, but I think it is, which is funny.
Mm.
Bring out your dead round. You got anything left, Alan?
Oh, I think we got the most important things. It's kind of silly, but I eat a lot of pizza in the summer, like a lot.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
We're so close to Campus Pizza. We're so close to a park in the summertime.
Yeah, hanging out in the park and
almost pizza. Once a week. Yeah. Well, once a week or once every couple weeks. It's like, can we just like bring pizza to the park.
Yeah.
So it's silly because like you can eat pizza whenever you want. But yeah, for us, it's like, there's a sharp, uptick in our pizza consumption in the summer.
Cause it's easy, Alan, and you want to be outside and you don't want to waste all your time slaving over a hot stove.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, barbecue, like in the Southern style, like I would never do in the winter because you don't want to have to tend a smoking barbecue for hours and hours in the winter.
Yeah.
And so,
but I never do long cooks on meat in the summer like that anymore. I used to do them like, you know, fairly often, like once or twice a summer, like a pork shoulder or a brisket or something like that. But yeah, I rarely do it anymore. I don't really know why. I guess like maybe I don't have the best grill for it now or the best facility for doing it now. So I just don't.
Yeah, it's been a long while.
It would be a lot of effort. I would have to tend it really.
Right.
Like I'd have to be on it all the time. Whereas like if you have something like, you know, a ceramic charcoal grill or something, you can get it to the right temperature and let it sit for a few hours, but I would have to like monitor it really closely.
Yeah, we haven't done a big joint like a or like a brisket or anything in a long time, but the ribs we still do.
Oh yeah,
at least once a year the kids like ribs, and again like with the sour cherry barbecue or something, that goes over well. If there's any other, like in terms of the seasonal produce and stuff, peppers.
I mean, you never really mentioned asparagus, which is like pretty summer only for me, but
yeah, that's what, when does our, yeah, ours is like spring, summer, like it's kind of like the very last weeks of May and the very first weeks of June that ours is ready. So that's not summer shale. So that's why I didn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Sorry. This is the summer episode. We'll have to wait till next spring episode.
Yeah, exactly. That is a special thing. That's probably like asparagus and rhubarb are the two massive, like late spring, early summer kind of harvests, that we look forward to for sure. Yeah.
Man, there's this thing that I wanted to try all this summer and I just like didn't get it together to try it. But like I saw it on social media a whole bunch at the beginning of the summer. And it's like, basically you just take a block of tofu and then you cut into it, but you don't cut it all the way through. You just like cut it, like both ways. So it's like cross-hatched.
Okay.
Basically,
yep.
Like probably 3/4 of the way through. Mm-hmm. And then you make like a dressing with chili oil and sesame oil and black vinegar and other like whatever kind of stuff that you want, and a ton of cilantro and a ton of spring onion. And then you basically just pour that dressing over the top of like a whole kind of block of tofu and like let it sink down into the cross hatching that you made.
Right.
And then you just basically eat it like a salad.
Okay.
Looks so good. Looks so refreshing. And I really wanted to try it this summer and I never really got around to it, but
it's not too late.
Still want to try it.
It's
not too late. Hopefully there will be a really nice evening sometime. I do have a block of tofu in my fridge, so maybe in the next week.
What are you waiting for?
It's too late to eat it right now, Alan. It's almost my bedtime.
Hey, listeners. You can help support Food Court and access great bonus content by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/foodcourtpod. If subscriptions aren't your thing, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Food Court is recorded in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Your hosts are Alan Sedeby and Shale McDonald. Theme music by Ryan McDonald. To get new episodes on the day they're released, follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. We love to hear from you all. Please drop us a line at feedback@foodcourt.fm or find us on Instagram @foodcourtpodcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a fresh new episode. Thanks for listening.